Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. None of us will ever forget this day. Yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Leading with Sense. I'm your host, Tim McAndrew. Today, I'm going to be covering Money Marching Order number 7, which is college planning. So far, I've covered a lot of the Money Marching Order steps. Number 1 is to stop movement and get your headcount. This includes doing a budget, canceling all your unnecessary subscriptions, and just overall getting a headcount on your finances. Next is your helmet emergency fund and Money Marching Order number 2. Again, this is $1,000 to $2,000, depending on your largest deductible, into a savings account. And then after we get that $1,000 to $2,000 into that savings account, we're going to go off to paying off debt and our blended retirement system match. Next is Money Marching Order number 4, which is our body armor, which is 3 to 6 months of net pay from our LES into retirement savings, which is Money Marching Order number 4, which is body armor. And this is 3 to 6 months of net pay from our LES amount into a savings account. Money Marching Order number 5 is Pension Plus. And this is putting 10 or 15% into retirement, into a Roth preferably, into your TSP or IRA. Money Marching Order number 6, which was my last podcast, is save and invest 10% into non-retirement investments. And today what we will be covering is Money Marching Order number 7, which is college planning. So again, if you've been listening to me for a little bit, you kind of know what this podcast is about. You know it's about the soldier. You know it's about the soldier's family. And you know that these steps are creating the foundation and they are providing a roadmap to financial success, right? So there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of crap out there, and it's hard to know what to follow. So creating these steps gives you something to follow. It gives you something to use as your roadmap, because otherwise we may not know what we're doing is bad, or we may not know what to do next. And just like, you know, younger soldiers or soldiers in general, idle hands can cause problems. And same thing with your money. If your money doesn't have a purpose, if it doesn't have a place to go, if it doesn't have an assignment, if you don't know what you're going to spend money on, then usually this turns out bad for you in the sense that there's no plan, so you never move forward in finances. So college savings. In the military, there's a lot of different options to pay for college, whether it's yours or your dependents or your child's college. So there's a couple different buckets on which we can pull from for college planning. The first one I want you to look at is your GI Bill. I want you to look at your GI Bill and see, first of all, are you eligible for the GI Bill? Have you served long enough for the GI Bill? And if you're eligible for the GI Bill, I want you to consider, are you going to use it yourself or are you going to pass it on to your dependents? So if you pass it on to your dependents, you need to do that sooner than later, because if you decide to pass it on to a dependent, that usually requires an additional service obligation of 3 or 4 years from the time you decide to transfer it. So if today you said, hey, I want to transfer it to my wife. Okay, 3 or 4 years from the time the paperwork's done, that's how, you know, you owe 3 or 4 years from that time. So the sooner you can get it done, the sooner you can serve that time and not have that as handcuffs keeping you in the service. So I want you to think about, if you're eligible, who's going to use it? Are you going to use it? If yes, then that's fine. If no, then you need to think about transferring it. Now, if you say that you're going to use it yourself, I want you to think about another program that's available called tuition assistance. So tuition assistance will pay a certain amount of your college credits while you're in the service. And again, there's an additional service obligation associated with this from the time you stop using it. So from the time you stop using it, so let's say I was getting my graduate degree and it took me a year to get my graduate degree, I would owe 4 more years from that point from getting my degree. So if you think you're going to use it yourself, just think about using tuition assistance instead and then passing on your GI Bill to your dependents. Again, transfer that early. Transfer that as early as you can because, again, there's additional service obligation associated with that. And the sooner you transfer, the better off you'll be. And then you need to look at what schools take the GI Bill. So the school you want to go to or your kids want to go to, you need to look at how far will the GI Bill go. And then you need to think about your college planning beyond that. And then look at your state-specific programs. So if you're from Texas and you love Texas, you know there's some programs in Texas that are good for military families that you can take advantage of. Again, just look at your state. Again, there's different programs out there. And again, with a little research, you can find out what's going on. And then you need to look at, too, like what other training could the GI Bill be used for? So if you want to be a pilot or something, you can use a GI Bill for your commercial single engine and your instrument. But again, I think there's better use of the GI Bill, you know, passing on to your dependents. It'll save you a lot of money in the long run having to fund their college. So you take a look at the GI Bill and you find out, yep, we're going to transfer it, or no, we're not going to transfer, or no, I'm not eligible for it, or you want a backup on how you're going to fund college. So there's two different ways we can go about funding our children's college. There are custodial accounts, and then there are like 529s and educational savings accounts. So for the differences between the two, there's some big differences that we want to hone in on. So a custodial account, let's talk about that one first. So a custodial account, again, they kind of vary from state to state, but this is what's known as UTMA or UGMA. And that stands for Uniform Transfer to Minors Act or Uniform Gift to Minors Act. Again, these are state specific. So in these accounts, you are the custodian of the account. You are the manager of the account. But as soon as your child turns of age, according to that specific feature of that account, whether it's 18, 21, 25, the money is 100% theirs to do with what they want. So you may say it's your college account, but when they become of age, they can use that account for whatever they want. So they don't have to use it for college at all, but the money would be there for them to use if they wanted to. So again, the money is theirs when they turn of age. And you are just a custodian. So one really good benefit from this type of account is that there are a lot of different investment options to take advantage of. Again, you can pretty much invest it in whatever you want. So that's one good thing. And then as far as tax break goes, so the tax break that you can benefit from is the gift tax, because you're gifting this money to your child, right? So the gift tax is limited to $15,000 a year per person. So what this means is you can give your child $15,000 a year to this account, and your spouse can give $15,000 a year if you really needed to be aggressive for saving for college or putting money into account for college. So that's good. And then any interest that's earned on the account when they withdraw, it'll be at their tax rate. So when your child's entering college, you know, their tax rate's very low because they don't have much of an earned income. So that's a couple benefits of this program. And another benefit of the program is that there's no limit on how much money you can put into the account. So again, take advantage of the gift tax, which is $15,000 a person per year. The money is theirs when they turn 18, 21, or 25, depending on the plan. And you have a lot of different investment options in this. You take advantage of that tax break for the gift tax. And then the income or the growth or the interest on the principal, that will be taxed at the child's income. So there's a lot of good options here. Again, there's no limit. So it's not trapped into this vehicle to where, you know, if they don't go to college, they'll have to withdraw it at a penalty or something like that. The money is irrevocably theirs. So they can spend it on whatever they want. Our second option for paying for college is a 529 plan. So there used to be the 529 and the educational savings accounts, the ESA. But now there's a little more flexibility in the 529. So think of your 529 plan as the Roth for college. And what I mean by this is you get a lot of different tax advantages on the money as long as it's used for qualified educational expenses. So the money that goes into a 529, you can often deduct that amount from your annual income, your adjusted gross income, for your state tax. So if you contribute $6,000, you can reduce your income usually by $6,000 for your state tax. And when the child withdraws the money, or when we withdraw the money for the child for college, for qualified educational expenses, and again, these are things like college, trade school, cosmetology school, expenses associated with that, books, room, board, all of that is withdrawn tax-free. You've got a tax advantage when you put the money into the 529. And then when you pull the money out of the 529, you've also reaped a tax benefit that growth was tax-free coming out. So again, the money contributed is deducted from your state taxes. And then the money grows tax-free as long as it's for qualified educational expenses. There's a couple different things about this to take note of. So if you put money in a 529 and your child decides not to go to college, the money is not lost. So there's different things we can do with that money once it's in a 529 plan. Because if we withdraw the money for non-educational expenses, we're going to pay a 10% penalty on top of our tax rate. So if our tax rate is 25%, we're basically going to pay 35% to get that money out. And again, that's just on the earnings. That's not on your contributions. So what can we do if our child decides not to go to college or they choose a different route? So your 529 plan, you can transfer to another person. So if you have multiple children, you could transfer that from one child to the other. No problem. Again, you are the owner of this money. So if you transfer it, that's fine. You can also make yourself the beneficiary if you want to do educational expenses yourself. So if you want to go back to grad school or doctorate school or trade school or whatever it may be, you can make yourself the beneficiary and use it that way. Another benefit of the 529, which has kind of made the ESA a thing of the past, is that now you can use it for K through 12 school up to $10,000 a year. So you can pay for private K through 12 school up to $10,000 a year based on the plan. And a couple of years ago, the SECURE Act, S-E-C-U-R-E Act, was put into place by the Trump administration. And what this stands for is setting every community up for retirement enhancement. That's what SECURE stands for. And they kind of expanded what the 529 can be used for. So in the SECURE Act, they expanded what the 529 could be for to include now apprenticeships. So the apprenticeships must be registered with the Department of Labor. So your college, placement office or apprenticeship office, they should know what programs are registered with the Department of Labor and which ones are not. So any expenses associated with that apprenticeship, you can use 529 expenses for. And then probably one of the biggest ones that people don't really know about is you can now use your 529 funds for student loan repayment. That looks like is you can use $10,000 per family member to pay off student loans using that 529. So if there's a lot of money in there and you have a family member who has a lot of student loan debt, you can transfer that, make them the beneficiary, and they can withdraw up to $10,000 a year to pay off student loans. And then, of course, the other option is if the money gets trapped in there, is you can pull it out, pay the penalty, plus your tax rate, and gift that to your child or something like that. So again, it's not the worst thing if you have to do that, if you have to pull the money out. Now let's talk about if they get a scholarship. So if your child gets a scholarship to a school for football, military, whatever, you can withdraw the exact amount of that scholarship. It's going to usually be at your tax rate. So at your tax rate, you're going to pull that money out, the exact amount of the scholarship, no penalty, and that's fine. So if your child gets $30,000 a year and a scholarship, you can pull that money out, $30,000 a year at your tax rate on the growth, and you'll be set up that way. And one thing with the 529 plans also is there is a limit on how much money can be in there. Again, you don't want to overfund it to begin with. You know, if you have too much money in there, you know, college only costs so much money unless they go on to do grad school, PhD, you know, and they're a forever student. But the limit on that is $235,000 to $529,000, depending on your state plan. So I know I covered a lot in this episode. So to review real quick, so college planning, we can pull the money from three different places. So GI Bill is one place we can pull it from. And again, see if you're eligible and transfer it early if you want to transfer it. You can do a custodial account, which you're basically gifting money to your child. And when they turn 18, 21, or 25, the money is theirs. And they can withdraw the money at their tax rate. And then the last option is a 529 plan, which is a lot like a Roth for education. So the money goes in, you deduct that amount from your taxes, and then the money withdrawn for qualified educational expenses is also tax-free. So it's like kind of like tax-free in, tax-free out. So it's a pretty good deal. And then if you can't use it for college, you can always transfer it to someone else, or you can pay off student loan debt or do an apprenticeship with it. And then if all else fails, you can always pull it out. So that's where the money comes from. So let's talk about college itself a little bit. And there's kind of a perception that you have to go in debt to go to college, or that you have to go to a really expensive college for it to be valuable. And there's no way that you can reduce your expenses because you want the college experience, right? So the biggest way to win with your college experience, quote unquote, is your college choice. So obviously, if you choose an expensive college, it's going to be more to go there. Crazy, I know. So if you spend a lot to go to college, it's expensive and you might graduate with loan debt. Where if you go into a in-state tuition at a state university, your costs are going to be relatively low. So the number one thing that you can do is college choice to graduate ahead, right? So the least amount of debt graduating out of college, even though, you know, your college tuition is a big investment in your degree, but it's not necessarily worth going into a lot of debt to get. You know, I run into people with $200,000 in student loans, $400,000 in student loans. Like, this is not unheard of to hear of people graduating with this much student loan debt. And though it's a good investment, meaning they invested $200,000 and over their lifetime, they'll make, you know, over $1 million, over $2 million based on their profession. This is kind of weighing them down early on in life, right? So if they're paying $1,000, $1,500, $800, whatever, in student loan repayment, the minimum, you know, this is slowing them down initially. And a lot of millennials, a lot of people graduating college, they're delaying their lives because of student loan debt. So they're pausing stuff in their lives so they can pay the minimum interest on these loans. You know, it's really hampering that class coming out of college because, you know, especially with COVID now too, you know, there's less jobs available and they're graduating with more student loan debt. I mean, it's just kind of that squeeze that we saw in 2008, 2009. All these people were graduating and there weren't jobs there. So you really need to look at what you're going to college for, your college choice, and how much it's going to cost. Then looking at ways to reduce costs. So a good way to reduce, you know, just living expenses costs so you don't graduate also with this credit card debt is to work while you're in school. And I know a lot of people think that working while you're in school is going to really affect your study time. You're not going to have enough time to hang out with your friends. But if you're anything like me, like, you need that kind of structure. You know, if you work 3 days a week, 2 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it might be, that's going to help offset your living expenses. And therefore, you know, kind of giving you a structure also to be like, okay, I work these days, I need to study these days, and that's just how it is. Where I find if you don't have a structure to your day in college, it can be a lot easier to fall behind or not have priorities. So if you have priorities with work, you have priorities with your classes, and you're paying for college and you're, you know, not going into debt to do it, I think overall you're going to be a lot more successful. And then also some things that we can do to get more money towards college in the terms of financial aid and things like that is score higher on the SATs and the ACTs. So some ways that we can do this is specific tutoring for the test. I'm going to let my listening audience in on a little secret about pilots, about airline pilots specifically, right? So airline pilots have to take a written test before they become airline pilots with the FAA. What they do is they study for the test. They don't just study all the knowledge there is to know about everything to be a pilot, because there would be too much to study. So they study the question bank. You know, it's like 2,000 or 3,000 questions, but they will spend a month or two studying those questions. So when they go to take the test, they've seen all the questions and they know the answers. What I'm saying is there's tutoring specifically for these different tests that can help you score higher on the test. They're not necessarily increasing your knowledge base, but they're prepping you for the types of questions you'll see on these tests. And why is that significant? Because if the SATs and the ACTs, if you take them different times, a lot of times they'll let you take the weighted average. So if you scored higher on math one time and scored higher on reading and writing another time, or whatever the categories are now, they'll take the higher score from each one. And then this allows you to get more financial aid, more scholarships based on your score. So tutoring is a big advantage. It could be a really good investment if you spend a couple $100 on tutoring or whatever, or you get the tutoring kits or the test prep kits. This can save you a lot of money in the long term on tuition because they get those benefits. As far as college choice goes and what to do during college, you know, in-state tuition is going to be your cheapest, obviously. If you go to a really expensive private school, obviously it's going to be more expensive. So you need to look at what your finances look like and if you're able to cover that. And then above that, you know, getting tutoring for the SATs and the ACTs to help you get more financial aid is really, really important. And then if we can have Junior work while he's in college, it's going to give him a lot more purpose and allow him to succeed more while offsetting some of his financial costs, whether it's living expenses or tuition payments. This is my college episode, and those are the nuts and bolts. We've got the GI Bill, custodial accounts, UTMA and UGMA, and our 529 plans to fund college. And then while we're in college, we're going to make sure we, you know, go to in-state school, or we can even go to community college to get the gen eds knocked out and then go to our school choice after that. And then we're going to get tutoring for the ACTs and the SATs so we can score high on those and get financial aid. And then we're going to go to work while we're in school so we can offset some of our living expenses and learn how to handle that money properly. That covers my college episode. I appreciate you guys tuning in to this episode. And this, we have one more topic in the money marching order to cover before I'm done covering all 8 money marching orders. And then from there, we'll cover things specifically transitioning from AIT to your unit, what to do when buying a house for the first time, stuff like that. So a lot more practical things to give you more guidance and specific recommendations on different topics. So again, to review, money marching order number 1 is to stop movement and get your head count. Money marching order number 2 is to helmet emergency fund. Number 3 is pay off debt and BRS match. Number 4 is body armor, 3 to 6 months of net pay in an emergency fund. Number 5 is pension plus. 6 is save and invest 10%. And this is number 7, college planning. So again, appreciate you guys tuning in. And again, I'm your host, Tim, and this is Leading with Sense.